We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in baseball isn't boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Welcome to another week. It has been a wild weekend of distortions, of media distortions over what exactly is going on. This double-edged argument over the violence in American cities, is it all Donald Trump's fault? Is it the fault of radicals? Anti-American radicals who've been anti-American radicals for decades. The groups continue on protesting against American form of liberty-based government. We're going to try to talk about that a little bit today, but we've got Jolly Ned coming up in the 4 o'clock hour. Joining us right now, we're going to talk about, you remember last week what happened with the immunity bill for police, the Democrats voting to take away the qualified immunity for police officers. That is making it possible for police to be sued for doing their jobs. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Is that an outrageous thing or an appropriate thing? There are arguments to be made on both sides of it. Joining us now is a guy named Elliot Spector. He serves as an expert in law enforcement issues for a law firm called Hassett and George. Used to be a Hartford police officer. And he reached out to us looking to come on the air. We thought it might be interesting to talk to him. Elliot, welcome, and thank you for reaching out and deciding to come on the air with us.
Thanks, Todd. Pleasure to be here.
Tell us a little bit about your background and the context that you come to this conversation with.
Well, in your introduction, you mentioned some protests, and my interest in law enforcement started off then because I was a liberal college student at UConn at the time, and we had protests and riots about the civil rights issue and about Vietnam. And I was one of those students to think that police officers were conducting themselves in a very poor manner. And it was around, you know, sometime after President Kennedy told my members of my generation that you should serve the country. And so I was deciding on whether to go to the Peace Corps or AmeriCorps, but because of the problem with police, I decided I'd become a police officer. And I'd become a police officer because if I were a police officer, there'd be one less bad cop. And that's why I joined the Hartford Police Department. And it didn't take long for me to learn that most of the people, in fact, all the people that I was with, were just like me. They were people that just wanted to serve the community, protect the public, and good, honest people. And I think that's
Are you saying that your perception was of your fellow officers that they were noble in purpose?
Well, I learned that. And the way I learned that is I was associated with them. I worked with them. And I found out that all of my perceptions of police officers were wrong. And that's one of the problems that we have with what's going on now, is that people don't understand the realities of policing and what police officers are really like. It's a real misperception. I'm going to tell you something.
Well, why is what they're like relevant? It seems to me that if we have a problem, what's relevant is the cause of the problem. And I don't see that as being a personality test. I see that as a test of the system. Do you not view it that way?
No, I don't view it that way. Not when police officers are painted with a broad brush as racists and people that commit acts of police brutality and people that are dishonest. I mean, that's what this accountability bill is all about, that we have a perception of police officers as being people that lack integrity and do bad acts, and it's just, you know, a false representation.
Well, do you think we had this? Do you think we had this perception a couple months ago?
Are you talking
about a long-standing issue or a new one?
Well, the perception has been growing greatly. I mean, there have always been times where people didn't like police officers, you know, and that's always been true. But it gained a great deal of momentum when Eric Holder became Attorney General, and he had a bias against police officers, and his agenda was to prosecute more police officers because he believed police officers were not good people, and they were, you know, broadly violating people's civil rights. And that gave some authenticity to the small groups of people that were police. We call them police haters. And then, of course, we had the creation of the Black Lives Matter movement. And, of course, there are other organizations that have been, you know, spewing venom against police officers over the years. And the media has attached to this. And every time a police officer does something wrong, it becomes a huge media event. And when we have this drumbeat over and over and over again about alleged police racism and police brutality and police officers killing innocent people, that's something that becomes accepted. And it's a huge problem because if we really look at the facts, it's not true. I do want to mention one thing. There was a person that I know that sent a letter to their state senator to vote against this bill. And I have the email that was sent back from the state senator at noon today up on my computer here. And the email from him says, the bill was prompted by the demands of Connecticut citizens and many of the residents in his district who were rightly outraged by the murder of George Floyd and others like it. These types of actions by bad police officers are entirely unacceptable and sadly damage the integrity of law enforcement, especially in communities of color. And that's why he's voting for this bill. He's voting for this bill because of what happened in the George Floyd incident. I'm going to tell you something that the day...
Well, hold on a sec before you go on. What's wrong with that so far? That sounds like a pretty straightforward statement in the letter. And politicians who represent areas in which there's an inflamed response to the George Floyd killing, though they're trying to do something to mollify the mob, I think, at this point. But that doesn't reflect necessarily statewide the average perception of police officers. I think if you talk to the average person, you would find that they're supportive of police, realize they have a tough job, think there are a few bad apples.
And I think you're correct in that. I think that the silent majority hopefully still supports and believes police officers are good people doing a good job. The problem is that this is an isolated incident in another part of the country, and what happened to George Floyd does not represent what generally happens in Minneapolis, around the country, and certainly not Connecticut. This is such an unusual circumstance that something like this, at least in my brief experience in policing in the last 49 years that I've been involved in this, has never, ever happened before. And every single police officer in Connecticut is upset and outraged about what happened. In fact, I had a use of force class the day that this happened, and we talked in the morning about how police officers can take people to the ground, can kneel on them to handcuff them momentarily, but then turn them over, sit them up, but stop restraining them. And then someone in the class said, did you see what happened on the news? And it was George Floyd. And so we showed the video, and more than 40 people in the class, including two police chiefs, all agreed that that was wrong. This is something that has never happened in Connecticut, would never happen in Connecticut, and we don't need this type of legislation to deal with an issue that is not present in Connecticut. There's no evidence to support any of the reforms, and I'd be happy to go through them, because basically what the legislature should be doing is, we have a problem, here's the evidence of the problem. And when I talk about evidence of a problem, I'm not talking about rhetoric. I'm not talking about hyperbole. I'm not talking about some, you know, unsupported opinions and conclusions or even anecdotes that are uninvestigated. I'm talking about cases and incidents that have been investigated and show that there is a problem, there is an issue. Then you decide what to do. You don't make these broad reforms that are going to be very damaging to the citizens of Connecticut, not only in terms of taxpayer dollars, but more importantly, by the damage that it will cause by less effective law enforcement in Connecticut. And that's
that's the risk right now. But when you say you don't, who are you talking to? Politicians do. That's what politicians do. They see some heat. They get nervous about the heat. They figure out how to protect themselves from the heat. Then they figure out how to turn that momentum into something that changes the law in a way that benefits them politically. It seems to me that's what's going on here.
But if politicians are supposed to act in the best interests of the citizens of our state, then they don't make their decisions based on politics or what appears to a small group of people to be the thing to do. And I know your opinion on that, so we don't have to address that issue. But all I'm saying is that let's look at the facts. Let's look at the reality of Connecticut policing. It's not, a knee-jerk reaction to something that occurred in the other part of the country. Let's really find out what's going on with regard to any of the particular issues.
Let's do that right now. We're talking to Elliot Spector. He's an attorney at Hassert and George, a law firm in Simsbury, I think. And he used to be on the Hartford Police Department 30-plus years ago. And I think it's interesting to get your perspective on this. I'm just concerned that we talk about realities and not worry too much about perceptions. Politicians like these kinds of moments because they can kidnap issues. And the reality is, I'm not sure. Your perception of reality seems to be Connecticut is excellent in terms of the way its law enforcement operates, and these kinds of problems don't exist. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying these types of problems like the George Floyd incident and widespread racism, police brutality, do not exist in Connecticut. Do we have use of force cases which are unreasonable? An officer may handcuff someone when they shouldn't have handcuffed someone, may push someone, or maybe taser or pepper spray someone. Do we have these types of things that occur? Of course we do. Do we have widespread racial profiling here in the state of Connecticut? No. Do we have bias? Of course we have bias, but officers are taught on bias, and more often than not, in fact, almost all the time, they control their bias and they don't let it affect their decisions.
But it might be more effective to not look at Connecticut as a single entity, but look at urban areas, maybe with significant minority populations. And I imagine that if we spoke to the people who lived there, that what we would hear is that they have a negative relationship with police, that police seem hostile to them, have a chip on their shoulders, don't show them the same respect that a member of a suburban community might get from their police force. Is there any of that that goes on in your mind?
Oh, I am sure that there are police officers that do not conduct themselves in the best manner possible. We try to train our police officers, and we should do more, that they should be professional and courteous. In fact, they should be kind and go out of their way to help people, because every single person that you deal with is someone that later may be a decision maker that has something to do with your actions. They may be sitting on a jury. And you want all of their exposures to police officers to be positive. And that's something that we seek and we strive for and something that we train for. But are there officers that are rude to people and discourteous to people? Of course there are.
Well, not just rude, but where there's an attitude, I imagine. I don't have firsthand knowledge to go on. It's just from what I observe and absorb from the news that in poorer communities and communities where there is more crime, that there's a different attitude among police towards the people who are paying their salaries and who they're paid to serve and protect. I would imagine there's tough communities where they're more on edge, they're feeling more defensive, and they view the people they're policing with a bit more hostility. So let's talk about that in a moment. We're talking with Elliot Spector. He is an attorney, former Hartford police officer. We'll take a quick break and continue the conversation on WTIC. Yes, WTIC. So the point I want you to respond to, Attorney Spector, is this idea about whether in poorer communities, tougher communities, minority communities, if you agree with the premise, which I think would be the argument from those who are pushing for some kind of legislative adjustment with how policing is structured, that there are certain communities, the type of community that I just itemized, that where they have a hostile relationship with their police department, where they feel that they aren't respected by those police in general. What's your thought on that?
Well, you know, I know it's been a long time. I was a police officer in Hartford during the 70s, from 71 to 80. But I worked only in the minority communities. My first regular cruiser was in a housing project with only minorities there. And I know that I and the officers that I worked with treated them with respect and tried to do the best we could for them. You know, and I think that the perception that you're talking about probably comes from some bad experiences that people have had, or maybe even their biases. But it's very difficult to calculate, you know, whether or not they are treated differently or more unfairly because they live in a poor or minority community. I can tell you that one of their major issues is this issue of racial profiling and how, you know, widespread racial profiling is in Connecticut. And I suppose it would be true, particularly for those communities. But, you know, and we have a legislative committee to prohibit racial profiling. We do studies on racial profiling in Connecticut. Now, I'd love to have your help and the help from your listeners to identify a racial profiling case in the history of Connecticut that has ultimately been sustained by any court in Connecticut. I know people often turn to the East Haven case, but that was dismissed for a lack of sufficient evidence by the Second Circuit Court of Appeals. But I teach police officers, and I teach police officers on new cases that present problems and say, you should not be doing this because this happened in this particular case.
But I don't know that
any cases
putting
in Connecticut to rely on, which is absolutely incredible when you think about the image and the perception of police officers with regard to racial profiling, and the attorneys who love to bring cases against police officers, that we don't have a single sustained case that I know of in the history of Connecticut.
I think by putting it into a funnel like that, it's removing the conversation from the larger context, and that is that people in certain communities do have certain different kinds of feelings about the way they get policed, and that that feeling eats away at their respect for police officers and their relationship with their police departments. And it's very easy, I would think, for a small number of cops who've got an attitude to create that kind of gulf in the relationship. And I don't think it's fair to bring it down to one type of lawsuit. It seems to me common sense. If you're working as a police officer in a community that has higher rates of arrest and higher rates of imprisonment of certain populations, that there would be more tension between police and the community, right? If you're out in a comfortable suburb where there's a low crime rate, there's not much to develop hostility with police about.
Well,
but if you're in a troubled area with lots of people being arrested and dealing drugs and doing all those kinds of urban core poverty-driven things, how could there not be more tension, and how could there not be problems in the relationship?
Of course there is. If there are more serious crimes and there's more danger in certain communities, there's going to be a greater response from police officers. There are going to be more incidents of use of force because police officers react to acts of violence, and that's why they use force. And police officers have to use force of some sort every time they make an arrest, whether it's handcuffing or something greater than that. So, of course, there are going to be greater issues in these types of communities that have higher crime rates. There's no question about that. On the other hand...
Okay, we just have a minute, so I want to give you a chance to make your point. So go ahead and do that.
Okay, so my point about there being no evidence is that, you know, police officers in Connecticut are held accountable. This is the Accountability Act, and they are disciplined, they are decertified, they are sued, they are arrested. And I would like to know whether or not there's any particular case that anybody can come up with that indicates that an officer, because they have not been held accountable, has subsequently caused a serious civil rights violation. I'd like to know whether or not, you know, there's any incidents of serious misconduct where police officers have been entitled to qualified immunity. And that's not the reality. We've done research on this, and that simply is not the case. And obviously, within seconds, I don't have time to talk about this. But the bottom line here is we need better community relations. We need officers to treat people in a better manner. We want that because we need them to cooperate. They're the eyes and ears of law enforcement to help us deter and prevent crime. We also don't want depolicing. We want police officers to feel free and comfortable to go out and do their jobs to protect the community. But that's a natural consequence of what's happening in the attack on police officers, that they're pulling back on motor vehicle stops and on investigative stops that might deter or prevent crimes, which lead to greater harm to society. And we have more police officers that are being hurt. And the bottom line here is that we are going to have people that, you know, are not going to enter the profession, and that's happening right now, and people that are leaving the profession, good quality people, and we need, as a foundation, quality policing, better police officers. There's no question about it. So this act that is being presented is actually going to harm Connecticut citizens in a way that's going to literally cause deaths if there's more crimes, if there's more serious motor vehicle violations, etc.
I've got to hold you there. I certainly agree with those last points you're making. Elliot Spector, thank you, sir. Good to have you here from Hassett and George, a law firm, and Elliot is a former police officer. Thanks for your time, sir, and stay with us on WTIC. Yeah, it's WTIC. What did you think of the guest we had on? Elliot Spector. I agree with a lot of what he's saying, but I think there are some things that are clear. And to me, what's most important here is that there be a system in place that allows people who are upset with anything, because this is what democratic systems are all about. When people are unhappy with something, that unhappiness is supposed to be funneled through a system that will allow there to be a response to that unhappiness. And what we have in the systems that state government has built, and this is the rigging that Bernie Sanders talked about and that everybody feels, that you can't make anything happen in our society. You can't change policy when you want to change policy. You can't improve things when you want to improve things. There has been outrage in urban communities over the way they are policed for years. And I think that outrage exists because they're not able to have their voices affect the policy that their politicians adopt. And that's because of system rigging. And that's why I harp on the unions, because that's the purpose of unions. There are other ways to get at it. There are other systemic changes you could make. But the key thing is to not fight over whether there's bias or not. In my mind, the key is to adjust the system in such a way that the system can effectively mitigate these problems. That's my feeling. 860-522-9842. And let's go to Roberto New Britain. Hello, Roberto. Roberto, are you there?
I'm good. Can
Yeah,
can
go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Go ahead, Roberto.
Okay, well, I'm going to try to be quick. I grew up in New Britain, been in New Britain, Connecticut my whole life. I've seen policing and how it works, and it's been, for somebody like me, Hispanic, young, at the time, it's very scary. I'm going to mention an incident from one of my close friends, 19 years old, coming home, leaving a family member's house in two separate cars, his mother and his father in one vehicle, he's in his own vehicle, the Honda Civic. About 12 o'clock midnight, they pull up next to each other to say goodbye at a stoplight. One car goes one way, the other car goes the other way. They get pulled over by a young man, 19, gets pulled over by two police cars, snatched out his car, and basically just pulled out his car and said, we saw you selling drugs. No drugs in his car. Out of sheer panic, his experience with police has always just been not a good one from his past and what he's heard about.
Roberto, it's a little hard to hear you, I think, because of your speakerphone. Let me just try to recap and make sure I've got this right. 19-year-old guy, he's driving at midnight, and two cops come up to him and sort of do a joint pullover and accuse him of selling drugs, but you're saying he didn't have any drugs on him? Is that the situation?
No, he had no drugs.
Okay.
Can you hear me? He was just visiting Well, just leaving a home from a family member, visiting a family member, and met up with his mother and his father at the same stoplight while they turned one way and he went to go the other way to his home.
Okay.
Pull him over, snatch him out the car, and say, "We saw you selling drugs." Start searching his car, and he starts to panic because he's scared. He
yep.
starts to try to run. As he starts to run, officer grabs him, knocks him on the floor, punches him in his face, arrests him, and charges him for interfering with a police officer. Now, he tried to complain about the excessive force, but his voice was never heard. Why? Mm-hmm. Because he was accused of something that he had no part
of. So did they pursue any other charges against him?
No, they dropped all charges.
Okay.
They dropped all charges.
So that's a good story, I think, that indicates the kind of problem that exists where law enforcement has the ability, if they choose to get you no matter what. And certainly I see this happening to people with money, with federal prosecutors who just grab whoever they want and can ruin their lives just because they want to.
I have to say to you before you let me go, even with my own experience, I've been pulled over leaving my Home Depot job like 20 years ago in my Honda Accord. And when I get pulled over, first thing I'm asked if I have any drugs or weapons in the car. Are you sure you have no weapons? If I bring a dog up here, will they find any drugs? Why are you doing that to me? Why do I need that? If I violated the law, give me the ticket for the law I violated. If you have anything else, but if you don't, just leave me alone.
Right.
How can we trust someone when we feel like you're just expecting the worst of us instead of hoping for the best? You've already got your gun uncocked and you got your hand on your weapon. And my hands are shaking. Why are you shaking? Because I'm scared. I shouldn't be scared of someone who's sworn to protect me.
Well, especially these are people working for you who you pay through your tax dollars to keep your community safe. Roberto, thank you so much for the call. It's nice to hear from you. And I think that, you know, I'm not saying all of any one side is right or wrong. I certainly support police officers who I think are scared themselves. And that's why they have their guns in the ready position. But again, I want institutional adjustments to be made, so that the voices of people like Roberto, when they speak like that, are heard. That's all. It is possible to support police officers. As a matter of fact, I think it's essential if you support police officers that you can't support them blindly. You have to support them based on reality. That being that if there are bad cops, we all do better if those bad cops are somehow encouraged off of the police force. Jerry, you're next on WTIC. Hi.
Yes, hi, Todd. Yeah, I just wanted to comment on something that Elliot Spector was saying, how that stuff never happens in Connecticut. Well,
yes.
I had a personal experience, and then also I know of another experience that's very close to me, which resulted in a death. And the whole thing was covered up, and it was a recent decision by the Connecticut Supreme Court that the police officer was, they used the... this specific, I can't even think of the wording right now, but they couldn't be sued because they're protected. And that just happened this year, recently. Okay? So when he says that nothing like that ever happens in Connecticut, that is not true. And he's been out of law enforcement for a long time. I do agree with...
I think he knows what goes on in policing today, and I think he's got a particular attitude towards it, and I respect his attitude towards it. I just felt like to try to funnel us down that narrow path of specific civil rights violations, that's not what the issue is here. There's a larger issue here that's affecting us if we don't feel that our government is honest in the way it does business. And if we don't feel that we can redress that dishonesty, then we've got a political problem that needs to be repaired.
That's correct, because absolute power corrupts absolutely. And I agree with 95% of what he said, but there is that small percentage out there that needs to be held accountable. And like I said, in my case, it resulted in the death of a 15-year-old. And, I could give you more specific off the air, but... it's a real case that was decided this year by the Supreme Court in Connecticut.
That's that's horrible stuff when you're dealing with young people and that kind of violence taking place. Thank you for the call, Jerry. 860-522-9842. It is important that we listen to each other. It is. We have to listen to each other. We can't be knee-jerk about these things. We've got to respect when members of our community, the larger community, speak. Don calling from East Hartford. Hi, Don.
Hey, Todd. What's up? Long time.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah. Listen, the lawyer that called, that the caller just said, I agree with the lawyer 95% of the time. But he has to he has to admit that you have bad apples in the police force that needs to be weeded out. And that responsibility lies with the 95% of the good cops. They have to shun them. They have to put them out, get them out. They have to speak up when they see they're doing wrongs. They have to report them. You know, this code of silence is a problem in the police force all over the United States.
Yes, but Don, don't you agree? We've been talking about this a lot, and I'm sure you've heard a lot of it. Don't you think the reason the code of silence can't be broken is because the system supports the code of violence? So, you know, and back to the George Floyd killing, what was shocking about looking at that videotape was the sense that the officers had that they couldn't stop a murder that was happening right in front of them because it was one of their fellow officers who committed it.
Exactly. I've seen two articles on social media where police people, both black and white, complained that they were pushed out of their job because they complained about their fellow police officers. They were pushed out and forced out.
Yes.
You know, so that's the problem.
Yeah,
the lawyer needs to admit that we need to get the bad apples out. He needs to admit that.
Yes, and I think, again, I'm harping on the systemic aspect of this, Don, because it should be easy. It should be easy. Same thing, you know, if you're feeling defensive about the conversation taking place around police officers, look at schools. Schools, we know, we've been hearing the stories for years about how hard it is to get rid of a bad teacher. These are rigged systems. We deserve to have systems that are responsive to the marketplace because we all benefit when the system responds well to what's going on. Tony calling from New Britain. Hello there, Tony.
How you doing? I heard the other guy talking about when he got pulled over in New Britain. And they were next to each other at midnight. You know, that stuff happens around here in New Britain all the time. Two cops see a car together like that. And I'm actually with a friend of mine that got pulled over by the cops because we were in a certain area because of cigarettes. And they said it was a stop sign. But because we were two white guys in the area, so we were picking up drugs. And with this whole routine about this, we had nothing in the car. But you know, when you're at midnight, and I've seen it before, you know, people packing drugs from car to car, the cops are going to do that. They're going to pull you over. And we just got to stop because we were white guys during the daytime.
And what?
They were looking for drugs in our car. We were area by cigarettes.
Yes, but the story he was telling before was about what happened to him, to the 19-year-old, after he was pulled over, and that there was an act of violence committed against him. And what the caller was saying is this hostility. So if cops need to pull you over and ask you some questions, and maybe the pulling over is unfair, but they're trying to keep their community safe and they're treating you with respect, I don't think you're going to be that upset compared to that you end up getting charged with crimes that have to do with the arrest and not having to do with the thing they're claiming they pulled you over for.
Exactly. Why did he run out of the car? We didn't run out of our car.
Yeah, thank you, Tony, for the call. 860-522-9842. We'll take some more phone calls coming up on WTIC. WTIC, thanks for being here. Afraid the governor is going to jump in next hour and rob us of some of our time together. We'll go to Steve next. Hello, Steve.
Hi, Todd. I enjoyed your guest. I thought he was a little rosy on his defixations of the cops. That might be some because of the years he spent in the cops was back when things might have been a little better, or he could be misinformed. But I wanted to say that people's perceptions of what took place out there with that guy's kneeling on that fella and killing him, that has done more damage to the United States than if we had been dropped a nuclear bomb on us. We are in terrible situation because people's perceptions are extreme on both sides because of what happened.
Well, I think it's good when the truth comes out. So it seems to me that the truth was illuminated by the incident. I think the problem is not with the incident, but with the response to it. We get see how dishonest and manipulative the political system is, and how the politicians don't look for a true resolution to the issue, but instead look to piggyback it and take it where they want it to go.
There's a little bit about the situation that hasn't been discussed a lot about, and it's all the people, all the cops that were there that didn't stop that guy from doing what he did. And
what's your interpretation of that? Why did that happen?
Well,
that's the most shocking part of the whole thing.
It's corruption. It's the fear of being an outcast in your group. Cops feel, I can understand how they feel a lot of times. They feel like they're the only ones watching each other's backs. So how they're going to be ostracized by their own brothers if they turn their bad brother in. And then the people that
but Steve,
isn't
that the job of management, Steve? That management is supposed to keep an environment in which the incentives support good behavior. And over time, if the incentives are in the right place, good behavior will win out. That's what managers are supposed to make happen. If over a period of years you keep having the same complaints at different police departments around the country, you start looking at what the systemic issues are. And that's why I keep coming back to unions and the amount of influence they have over the rulemaking. If you know that your fellow officer will never get fired, even if he does something like that, that puts a lot of pressure on you to keep your mouth shut and go along with the gag, don't you think?
Well, from what I understand, he's only been charged with a lower kind of crime. He should have been, I think he should have got at least second degree murder.
Well, I'm not sure where it stands right now. I thought they were moving it to first degree murder and that moved to first degree. I don't know if that's happened. I thought Keith Ellison was looking at that, and I'll have to double check it. But be careful, because if you get what you wish for, that is the higher charge. They sometimes do that to make the crowd happy, to take the diffuse the energy of the mob, when in fact it's harder to find a cop guilty if you press a higher charge, because then there has to be intent.
Yeah, we're in tough straits, Todd. You're a very small voice in a huge mess of voices that are full of bad stuff.
Yeah, well, hopefully I'm not one of the ones filled with bad stuff, but I am a small voice in a sea of disparate voices. And I just want to get to the truth of things. I don't want to play games of having to obey a particular doctrine or to fall in with anybody, because that's what gets us into trouble, is when people won't speak their minds. Even if I'm wrong, if I say what I say and it upsets people, good. We should be upset. Things are all screwed up, and the reason they're all screwed up is because people kidnap our politics to use it for their own benefit. All I want to do is break up those relationships so we get to be the beneficiaries of our political system instead of all these corrupt insiders who rig it for themselves. That's what we're doing here.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.